Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hey, everybody, welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I am your host, Peter Schiff. I am here live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We broadcast on frequency 5.07 megahertz on shortwave and simultaneously on my website at www.europac.net. Europac.net. And this is a live show. We are looking for callers in this new year. See who will be the first to call Wall Street Unspun in the first show of 2007. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, why don't we try to spend this hour talking a bit about, you know, what happened in 2006 in the markets and look forward to what we think might happen in 2007. First of all, just let you know what I'm doing. I've got a TV show tomorrow morning. I'll be doing CNBC morning call right at the beginning of the program, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific. I'll be on morning call. And if you leave to go to the bathroom, you'll miss me. You know, it's only about a four-minute segment. So if you want to watch it live, you got to make sure you're glued to your TV right at 10 a.m. I did quite a bit of TV last week. I managed to be on Bloomberg television for a half an hour. I was actually going to be on an entire hour, but then they found somebody to take the other slot. So I was on for a half hour on Bloomberg television in the evening. Then the following day, I was in a lively discussion on Kudlow & Company. Kudlow & Company, you really should take a look at some of these on my website if you didn't catch them live. I was on Kudlow & Company on Friday evening for two of the segments. And then over the weekend, I was on Fox again. This time I was on Cavuto on Business. And Neil wasn't there. There was Stu Barney was the co-host. And I did that show, and I got in a discussion again about real estate. So I've talked about real estate a couple of times now on Fox, because I was on for the first time Fox Bulls and Bears on real estate, and then 2 weeks later they had me back again on Cavuto on Business. So I'm probably hopefully going to be on the Fox network quite a bit more often now, because, you know, when I went on for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and now that I got to know the people there, know the producers, they immediately called me back to do another show just a week later. So, you know, hopefully I'll be on. I think I was on television more than 30 times, maybe 35 times last year, which is almost not quite once per week. So hopefully this year around I might be on even more than once a week between Fox, CNBC, and Bloomberg. So you'll have plenty of time and chances to see me on television. And it's always very interesting because, of course, I'm always arguing with everybody, and very few people, you know, share my point of view on any of these shows. Also, I'm going to be doing, as I've said, the San Francisco Money Show. I think it's the first week of February, so it's coming up in about a month. Not San Francisco, the Orlando, rather, World Money Show in Orlando. And again, I'm going to have my client-only meeting, which is about a three-hour candid conversation in a room. Just me and the clients, and a lot of people get a lot out of those. If you haven't had a chance to attend the money show, it's worth going to the show, even if you're only going to go to my client-only workshop. And you don't actually have to be a client. I mean, all you have to do is pre-register. You have to, you know, make sure that you sign up and you find out where you know, you get the passwords of where the secret room is. Because we can't advertise it at the money show, so it has to be something. You have to know about it, on the low key. But it's good. I mean, it's people get a chance to clients meet another, and we really talk for a long time, and it's a more intimate setting. But you know, and of course, I'm going to be doing my normal workshops that I do at the money shows, two workshops, and I'm going to be doing again the bull bear debate. The bull bear debate. Of course, the bulls are going to be really excited. You know, because the market is up. But of course, you know, as I'm pointing out on these talk shows that I go on, the market is up, but it's still underperformed all the foreign markets. And that's interesting because, you know, when I was on Kudlow and Company, the host, again, Larry Kudlow was out, so the host was Stephen Leisman. And he did acknowledge, he pointed out, he said, look, I want to give you kudos, you know, I'm following what you're saying, and you're right, you know, the foreign markets did a lot better. He said, you know, but, you know, your advice on the U.S. market was wrong. I mean, if you're advising people stay out of the U.S. market, but then he acknowledged that my overall strategy was correct in that I said, don't be in the U.S. market because you're going to make more money abroad. Well, that's the whole point. As long as the overall strategy is correct, the fact that I told people not to invest in U.S. stocks was not a mistake, because I didn't tell people don't buy U.S. stocks, put your money in the bank. I said don't keep your money in the dollar either. I said you have to be out of all U.S. assets and you have to invest abroad. And as long as you did that, you're better off. Now, if you took my bearish advice on the stock market, but and said okay, I'm just going to stay in a CD or a money market, sure. You you didn't do well, but you didn't take my advice. Because my advice has never been to be in cash in U.S. dollars. And my advice has never been to short U.S. stocks. I've advised people against shorting U.S. stocks. So anybody who's done that hasn't followed my advice. The only advice that I've given out over the years is to not be in U.S. assets, period. Stocks, bonds, or cash. And as an alternative, to be invested abroad. And if you did that, even if you didn't buy foreign stocks, even if you bought foreign bank accounts, chances are you outperformed the U.S. stock market. And that's the key. The key is to understand what's happening to the value of the U.S. dollar. And it doesn't really matter if U.S. assets increase their dollar price if the dollar itself is losing value. That price is a very meaningless, misleading number. Now, what's going to happen in 2008? Are we going to get another year where the market goes up? You know, and everybody is talking about this great bull market, and you know, it began in 1982, and they're talking about it like it's still here. And I think the bull market ended in 2000. Sure, the Dow has made a nominal new high, But if you adjust it for inflation, which I think is very important during an inflationary time period like the one that we're living in. If you adjust the Dow's price for inflation, even the government's watered-down version of inflation, the CPI, the Dow is still considerably below where it was in January of 2000, 7 years ago. Doesn't sound like a bull market to me. Also, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, you know, the NASDAQ is nowhere near its nominal price, if we're forgetting about its real price. And the S&P is still considerably below the peak that it achieved in 2000, even in nominal terms. So I think this is, sure, the market has risen, and people who owned U.S. stocks in 2006 are better off than people who had U.S. cash in 2006. But people who had stocks and cash are worse off than people who invested abroad. But will they be so fortunate, in quotes, in 2007? I don't know. I mean, I still think that we're going to see new lows in the major averages below their 2002 lows, which, you know, for the Dow is 7,500 or so. And, you know, we're 12,000. So I still think that we're going to have a substantial nominal decline in stock prices. But, of course, the real decline is going to be a lot worse because inflation is going to get worse and worse and worse. And that's what so many people on Wall Street are just failing to comprehend, either intentionally or they just don't get it. So you can't just look at the Dow and be fooled by Wall Street into thinking that the bull market is back and that stocks are going to keep going up for another 10 or 20 years. They're not. In fact, if they do go up, it's only going to be in nominal terms. But I do think ultimately the nominal price is going to fall. If I'm wrong and nominal prices don't fall, it's probably because we're in a hyperinflationary period instead of just a highly inflationary period. And the difference there is dramatic, because under hyperinflation, the dollar could lose practically all of its value, and that is the worst-case scenario. Now, that would mean that stock prices rose, but it wouldn't mean anything to the people who owned them, because those high prices would not mean very much in terms of purchasing power. So anyway, you know, what was it that drove the market? Why did the market, you know, why did the market go up? I mean, a lot of people thought the market might not go up in 2006. I mean, you know, why did it? I mean, I don't know. The dollar had a relatively weak year. I mean, it sold off, and then it rallied, you know, in the middle of the year, and then it sold off again and ended the year near the lows. It didn't really break down, though. But you know what? It's very close. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I think at the end of 2004, I had made a prediction. I mean, I talked to the press quite often, and one of the things I said was that 2005 may be the year where the dollar finally collapses. Now, of course, it wasn't. The dollar actually rose in 2005, and that quote actually got picked up in Business Week as one of the 10 worst predictions for 2005. Now, to be honest, and I pointed it out to the Newsweek, that I made many good predictions in 2004 about 2005, like $60 oil, you know, when oil was 30. So, I mean, I had some very good predictions, but I didn't say that 2005 would be the year where the dollar finally collapsed. I said it could be the year where the dollar finally collapsed. And you know what? It could have been. It wasn't, but it could have been. 2006 could have been the year that the dollar finally collapsed. It didn't. Now we're starting 2007, and guess what? 2007 could be the year where the dollar collapses. It doesn't mean it's going to be, but it could be. And you know, each year the collapse becomes that much more likely to occur. I don't know how to figure out the exact probability, you know, of what it is. It's certainly not 100% probability that the dollar will collapse in 2007. I think it is pretty much 100% probability that it will collapse sometime. But will it do it in 2007? I think the chances of it happening in 2007 statistically are probably greater than what the chances were in 2006 or 2005. How much so, I don't really know. But we're certainly in far worse shape financially because of another year or two of additional debt. You know, the amount of dollars in global circulation far exceeds the number that circulated 2 years ago. And I know we have a much smaller percentage of our economy manufacturing than we did, and we have a bigger trade deficit now, and we have, you know, so everything has gotten worse. Whatever the problems were 2 years ago, and they were pretty damn bad, they're worse now. And you know, one of the things when I was on the CNBC on Kudlow and Company, when I, you know, we mentioned that, you know, we outperformed the market, you know, we did better by being abroad, Steve Leisman said, sure, you got better returns, but what were your risk-adjusted returns? You know, adjusting for risk, then maybe you didn't do as well as people that stayed in America. And I tried to correct Steve, and I said, no, your assessment of risk is wrong. My feeling is my clients, or the clients who invested abroad, didn't take less risk. I mean, didn't take more risk. They, in fact, took less risk. That the people who assumed the most risk were the people who invested in U.S. assets, for the very reason that the dollar might have collapsed. Now, it didn't collapse. But the risks that anybody took who invested in here was that the dollar did collapse. And my point is that it's going to collapse eventually. It's going to collapse eventually. And the fact that it didn't collapse in 2006 meant that people who invested in U.S. stocks and bonds dodged a bullet. Now they've got to stand in front of that gun again and try to dodge it. And then if they successfully dodge it in 07, they're going to have to dodge the same bullet in 08. They're going to have to dodge that bullet every single year until it turns into a machine gun. And eventually, they're going to get hit. There's a lot of risk there. I think we're taking less risk by investing abroad because the chances of these foreign currencies collapsing, I think, are substantially less. Now, over the long run, those odds increase substantially, you know, as with any paper currency. But as I say, you know, it's like a triage, you know, in the army, or you know, when you have the medics out there and they want to, you know, they bring people to triage and they figure out, okay, which ones have got the injuries that are the worst, but we think we can heal them. And then, you know, who has injuries that can wait, and then whose injuries are so bad that, you know, the chances are they're just not going to make it, so we're not going to waste any of our effort on them because they're just not going to pull through. You know, you try to figure that out. Well, if there is a triage for currencies, right, I mean, the one that we figure out has got the worst symptoms, that's the least likely to pull through, is the U.S. dollar. So we want to avoid that one, even though the euro or other currencies might eventually succumb to the same illness. They're not going to succumb to it just yet. So that's where we've got to be. And these guys, you know, they still, on Wall Street, they still try to adjust risk based on volatility with respect to the U.S. dollar. And, you know, that's still an old-fashioned way of looking at it, and it assumes that the dollar is safe. And it just takes that assumption for granted. And I think anybody who does that is blind to the actual realities of what's going on. And then most people on Wall Street are blind to it. I mean, things that I read and the things that people say, it's just incredible. Incredible what people actually believe. And some of the stuff, you know, I don't think they're lying. I mean, it's too incredible to lie with a straight face. I just believe that there's just people that are so completely and hopelessly misinformed and naive about basic economic principles, and that actually think that America is in good shape, that we've got a good economy, that, you know, that we've got clear sailing for as far as the eye can see. I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely incredible. Anyway, let me give out that phone number again. It doesn't look like anybody has called in. So far, nobody is the first caller of 2007. But the telephone number to call, what did I do with it? It's 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Call, particularly if you saw any of the programs that I was on, any of these Fox shows or the CNBC, the Kudlow show. If you have any comments on some of those exchanges and what some of the people said. I mean, some of the stuff I comment on myself, there's, you know, one guy on the real estate, a long-haired guy, I guess he was a realtor or something, and he started off talking. The guy talked so fast, I really couldn't understand what he said until I kind of watched it. You know, I TiVo'd it at my house. And I couldn't really believe what he said. He said that he thought that this year, 2007, was going to be a normal. He thought real estate price would go up 10% in 2007. And his reason was that he thought we would have a normal market in 2007. That, you know, the big oil shocks or whatever, the supply glut, all that was over, and so that now we were ready for normal conditions. And to him, he said, a normal market means a market where you have 10% appreciation. And so he thought we'd have real estate going up 10% because we would have a normal market. Now, can you imagine the insanity of such a statement? I mean, I didn't even get a chance to comment on it on the show because I didn't even realize he said it, to be honest with you. But that's a normal market? You get a 10% appreciation rate per year? That's normal? So you buy a house for $500,000, and every year you live in it, you get $50,000, or actually more, because, you know, after 1 year, it's, you know, the next year the appreciation of 10% is $55,000, and then it's $60,000 because you keep appreciating a bigger number. I mean, this is insane. I mean, if that were really the case, if it were really normal for real estate prices to go up 10% a year, I mean, everybody could just buy a $10 million house because, you know, because the mortgage rates are less than 10%. You know, you can borrow money at 6% or 7%. So that means if it's going to go up 10%, right, well, that means that, you know, whatever you borrow, the appreciation is enough to pay the interest and still pay down a little bit of principal, which would mean that, you know, banks could just loan anybody an infinite amount of money. It wouldn't even matter if you had any income. It wouldn't matter because the house would pay for itself. right? If you're going to get 10% appreciation a year, then who cares? I mean, why even? You don't have to have a job. You don't have to have any income. The house just takes care of it. I mean, the bank could basically just say, look, you don't have to make us any payments. You know, we'll just tack on the interest to the negative amortization. And, you know, we know it's not going to negatively amortize at 10% because, you know, your interest rate is 6 or 7%. So just live in a house for as long as you want. And when you sell it, you know, the bank will get their interest because it's going to go up 10% a year. It's insane. That's a normal appreciation. I mean, it's nowhere near normal. It's so far above normal. But we've got a situation where somebody who's a professional in the real estate industry convinced that what's normal is for real estate prices to go up 10% a year. That's not normal. That's insane. The fact that they went up 10% a year or more in 2002 or 2003, 2004 is not normal any more than it was normal for the NASDAQ to be going up 20 and 30% a year like it was. That wasn't normal. That was insanity. And when insane becomes the norm, then you know you've got a major bubble that's about to collapse. And the thing about the real estate bubble is it's already burst, and these morons can't tell. That bubble has already burst. Now, the air hasn't come out of it yet because in real estate bubbles, initially, you kind of get a slow leak. But all the air comes out eventually, just the same. Anyway, let me take a quick break. We still don't have any callers on hold. So the number to call, if you do want to make a call, is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. So let's take a quick break, and I'll be back hopefully with your calls after the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hello, we're back. Anyway, I've got a caller, apparently, who's hanging on. I'm having some technical difficulty, but I've got Jim from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Jim, ask your question.
Yes, thank you so very much for not screening calls. It proves that you are not engaged in propaganda. I would like to comment on what real estate is. What we have is a percentage-based business, so that the business of a realtor is to inflate the cost of housing in order to maximize their profits for their business. I would like to point that out. Thank you so very much.
Well, I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously, anybody who's selling anything wants to maximize their profits, meaning their sales commissions, and certainly home builders who are in the real estate market want to maximize their profits. They want to sell their homes for the highest possible price. That's always been the case. Is the caller still there?
Yes, but what I'm referring to specifically is real estate agents. They operate on a percentage basis.
Right, sure. The higher the price of the home, the higher the commission. But that's been true for, I don't know, 100 years or more, whatever when they've been doing it. What's different about the current environment is that the lenders and the credit, you know, normally what keeps a lid on home price appreciation is lenders and incomes. I mean, there's credit standards. I mean, people don't want to loan money on inflated home prices, so they want to get paid back. And so under a normal market, sure, the realtors would like houses to sell for more money, but their clients can't afford to pay to buy them for that money. So there's always a natural lid on real estate price appreciation that was blown apart in the last decade by the Fed, Alan Greenspan, by Wall Street, in this flood of liquidity and the securitization of the mortgage market and the complete abandonment of any kind of lending standards, which allowed people to pay ridiculous prices even though they couldn't afford to buy the homes. You know, one of the things when I was on this other talk show on Fox, this one guy, Mike Norman, you know, he basically, after I said my thing about these, you know, phony, you know, lax lending standards propping up prices, and artificially high prices, he came out and said, I don't know what Peter Schiff is talking about. What artificial lending standards? What is he talking about? You know, the guy was oblivious. He had no clue that, you know, zero down paint and no documentation or, you know, negative amortization were inflating home prices. And then the other guy, the long-haired guy in the real estate market, I forget his name. That's why I just got to call him a long-haired guy. But he said, there's nothing wrong with interest-only mortgages. I mean, he shouts that out. There's nothing wrong with interest-only mortgages. What do you mean there's nothing wrong with them? There's everything wrong with them. Because people who take out interest-only mortgages never pay for their house.
I see.
You know, they don't buy the house. They all they do is pay interest. They never make one dime of principal payment, so the loan never gets repaid. You know, they don't own anything. Now, sure, interest-only mortgages are great if real estate prices rise. But what if they stay the same, or what if they go down? You know, it's a disaster. You know, but the fact that these guys are so clueless to it. But sure, people in real estate are making a lot of money right now. They're benefiting from this mania, just like Wall Street benefited from the stock market bubble. But they didn't. I don't know that they necessarily caused it, because if that were the case, then we'd have bubbles all the time. I mean, the markets would always go up, but they don't. But sure, you know, they make hay while the sun shines. The thing is, Wall Street's making even more money now than they were making before. So I wonder how the hell they're doing it. Because it's not
printed of
NASDAQ, but they're doing something. It's probably in hedge funds or leverage data. Somehow they're making a ton of money.
An investment invading someone else's country and sucking the resources out of it, and they use their children to do it.
Well, I don't know. You're talking about Iran. We're not sucking much resources out of that country. I tell you,
imperialism.
A lot less oil is coming out of Iran now than before we got in there. I mean, Iraq. So less oil is coming out of Iraq now than, you know, there was more oil coming out of Iraq to the west when Saddam Hussein was at the pumps. So we're basically,
but they have to be
a rat hole down there. I don't think we're making any money on Iraq. We're losing money.
They don't have to pay for it now. They can just steal it.
Well, sure, we're paying for it. We're paying $70, $60 a barrel for it.
When you invade,
Saddam Hussein was there. He was only charging us $20 a barrel.
You invade.
Now we're paying $60.
Mistaken. Did you think that you know how much oil is coming out of that country now? You are quite mistaken.
What do you think? There's more?
I think you don't have any information about where the oil is going that's coming out of Iraq.
Well, oil. I mean, oil is oil. It's going into the global market. Anyway, thank you for the call, and keep on listening. Anyway, I forget what I was talking about before the call came in. I think I was on these TV shows, but yeah. I mean, if anybody saw any of these exchanges, I'd like to have hear your impressions. I mean, sure, I get some emails when I do these shows, and people comment on it. But I mean, I think it's very entertaining, and it really shows you. You know, because these guys, I mean, these guys are professionals. They're on television, so they must know something. Although maybe that's just a mistake. I mean, look, I'm on television, but maybe they don't know anything. But it's just amazing how shocked they are. You know, to hear a perspective that's not just in lockstep with what they think. But there are out there. I mean, there are people out there that say these things. But I don't know. They act like when they hear them from me, they're hearing them for the first time. But anyway, if you haven't seen any of these shows, you got to go on the website and watch them, because I mean, they're there. And let me know what you think next time around. In a week from now, you can call in and tell me what you think about those shows. Anyway. Looking forward to 2007, what's likely to happen? Is it going to be a repeat of 2006? Is the U.S. stock market going to go up again? I don't know. I mean, I tend to doubt it. I don't think that, we're going to have an up year. I have a feeling that it's going to be a down year. I think it can start out as an up year and get people even more, complacent and bullish than they are now. But I really do think that, you know, the dollar is going to be, you know, the rain on the stock market parade or the ants at their picnic. I mean, I think that, you know, it looks to me like this might be the time where we finally fall through the floor. I mean, there's every reason for it to happen. Will this be another 2000 and I guess it's possible. It's possible, but, you know, the odds are, there's so much more downside risk for the dollar. Potential if it doesn't. Decline and assures that it will be that much worse. But I just don't think the risks favor being in the U.S. market. They just don't. There are too many potential disaster scenarios that too many people dismiss out of hand, like they're not even possible, but they're very real. And I think there's a good chance that something is going to happen. I don't know that Asia is going to step up to the plate and lend America, you know, $2 trillion in 2007 or whatever amount they have to lend us to keep our artificial economy inflated. I don't know if they're going to make that mistake. They might. But why bet on it? Why take a chance? Because if you're wrong and it doesn't happen, you get destroyed. You get destroyed. And so it makes much more sense to be positioned for that likelihood. And again, just to point out, last year I said the same thing, that the U.S. dollar could collapse, that we could be in a terrible recession, and that people needed to be out of the dollar and out of the U.S. market just in case it happened. Well, it didn't happen. But you know what? We're better off. By investing abroad, we did better than by investing at home. That's why, you know, they call it in one of their TV shows on CNBC, the year of the bull. And I started out and I said, well, look, I'm the biggest bear on this show, and I probably did, I made more than anybody. My clients did better than anybody who was bullish. Because we were bearish, but then what did we do? What was our bearish strategy, right? How did we act on our bearishness? Well, we did it by investing abroad. We avoided the U.S. and dollar-denominated assets. We focused on commodity assets and non-dollar assets and conservative assets, and by doing that, we did better off. Now, even if we didn't do better off, even if we underperformed, I still maintain that the right thing to have done, given the facts and given the incredible risks in holding the dollar, even though the average person on CNBC or Bloomberg or wherever doesn't comprehend those risks are there. Those risks are real, and there is no reason to subject yourself to them, because one day they're going to show. It's like, you know, you can see a bunch of people swimming beneath a dam, and you know that it's not sound, that there's a leak there, and it's going to burst. And you might think it's not worth swimming there because you can see the dam is going to break. But the other people are oblivious to these structural problems. They keep on swimming in it, and they have fun. You're smart enough. You can see that it's not safe, so you stay away. And they're all laughing at you because they're having so much fun swimming in the water. Well, you know, eventually, you know, it's not going to be so fun. But the fact that you're smart and you can see in advance means for a while you don't have all the great fun that everybody else is having. They're laughing at you. Ah, you know, come in here and swim out of the water is great. You know, but you know that the dam is going to break. Well, that's the same thing. I mean, people are in the U.S. market and they think the water is great and they want everybody to come on in. Look, we're making all this money. And I know that it's structurally not sound. There's going to be a huge collapse. Fortunately, you know, we happen to be better off. We found a better pool, a more fun pool to swim in, or a lake to swim in, where the dam is quite a bit sounder. But the people swimming in the U.S. Equity pool might not be as fortunate in 2007. And if they make it through 2007, what are they going to do in 2008? You know, even if you make a good return in the U.S. stock market, so what? I mean, most of the return is capital appreciation, right, because there's very little in the way of dividend income. So what if it goes up? Because if you don't get out, you know, it has to keep going up, because all of a sudden, if it collapses, I mean, people made, I think the Dow was up like 16% last year with dividends, whatever, 13%, whatever it was. But what if it goes down 10% this year? Well, that means you've lost all your returns from last year. You know, and you made no returns this year. I mean, the returns aren't, it's not like whatever you made last year, okay, you know, that's what you've got. And now, you know, either you can add to it. No, you could lose it all back. Who says that those returns are really going to stay there if you don't sell? And of course, very few people cashed out of their U.S. stocks. So we'll see how real these returns are. Now, we know they're not real in an inflation-adjusted term. But even in the nominal terms, they might not be lasting because, you know, what the market gave us in 2006, it can easily take it away in 2007. And people are just not, you know, really cognizant of that. The same thing with real estate. You know, when people talk about real estate and home equity on these shows, they talk about it like it's there. Like, you know, you can't lose it. Like, it's like if your house goes from 500,000 to a million, that somehow there's a stop there on the floor. That if it was worth a million, well, that equity is always there. Even if your neighbor's house is on the market for 900,000 and can't sell, somehow your house is still, your equity is still that 500,000 that you hit at your high water mark. And people have this thought in their mind. And they figure, well, yeah, you know, I can't get my $900,000 today, but I just wait a year and I'll get it. But meanwhile, you know, the equity is still there. I could get the appraised value because I know this house is worth $1 million and I'm not going to sell it for anything less because my neighbor 2 years ago found an idiot to pay $1 million for his house, and he didn't have as nice a view as me. So people are still in their mind, you know, that they're reluctant to give up, and a lot of people just think that they take it for granted. But no, you know, just stock prices, real estate prices, you know, what they are today has very little to do with what they might be in the future, and absolutely nothing at all, because the circumstances, excuse me, could be very different. Because a price exists at a moment in time, and it reflects the circumstances at that moment, the supply and demand for the particular asset, the perceptions of the buyers and the sellers, and those can change dramatically over time, just like fashion. You know, what's in fashion one day is completely out of fashion. You know, you can have a certain, you know, suit on of clothing, you know, a leisure suit, let's say, and you know, you walk into a nightclub in, you know, 1976, and you're John Travolta, you know, you're hip, you're right on the cutting edge, you're looking good. You know, you walk into a place with that suit today, you know, you're not going to look too good. So things, you know, things change, and just because a house is selling for or appraised at $1 million. Doesn't mean that same house can't be $200,000, you know, 5 or 10 years in the future. It doesn't mean that at all. Because things change, circumstances change, perception changes, supply and demand changes. You know, gold, you remember gold. I mean, you know, I'm a gold bull right now. I'm very able to talk about gold. But, you know, gold was at $800 and change in 1980. Did it stay there? You know, a decade later, you know, it was a $300. And of course, you know, a few years earlier than that, it was 100 or less. Gold was still the same. It's just the market and the perception of value changes. And so people have equity, and now it's gone. And people today are acting like, oh, we've got home equity. You know, when I have these arguments about the U.S. economy, we have so much debt, they always fall back on, oh, it doesn't matter because you have to look at the debt in relation to our assets, our net worth. And of course, the bulk of those assets is home prices. Well, who says those home prices are permanent? Those home prices could collapse any minute. But the debt's permanent until we inflate it away, and we have to make interest payments on it. You know, we just can't tell our creditors, look, I can't afford to make the interest payment, but don't worry, because my house is worth $1 million, you know, my condo's worth $1 million, so I can't make my mortgage payment, but it's okay. You know, just wait a while, because you know I'm good for it, so it doesn't work that way. Anyway, I know we got another caller finally coming on the line. Let me take a quick break, the last commercial break, and we will come back for any other calls, too. The number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We will be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent broker. brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Again, the number to call for the last segment is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's take a call from Steve up in Toronto. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, hi, Peter. How you doing? Listen, I saw the CNBC interview and the Kudlow one, and I thought that you've got the right idea. Like, I mean, why wait for the dollar to fall? You know, you might as well be out of it now if you think it's going to fall. I agree with you. I think at some point it will. And, you know, like, I mean, 8,000 hedge funds out there, I'm sure when it finally does go, it's not going to be orderly.
Nope. And it's not going to be just one that goes. And there's actually over 9,000 of them now.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like, I mean, and everybody
use the word hedge fund. They're risk funds.
Yeah. And the I don't know if people have to actually just go out and sell dollars. What if they don't want to buy debt anymore? You know, that's not dollar positive.
There's very few things out there dollar positive, other than right now the fact that, you know, foreign central banks are still buying and making this whole thing possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they stop that, that somehow gives the same effect.
Going to, but I mean, the question is, why are they still doing it, and what are we giving them to do it? I mean, are we filling up their Swiss bank accounts? I mean, what is America doing? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we're funneling money through some secret slush fund into the personal Swiss bank accounts of central bankers all over Asia and politicians all over Asia to keep this thing going. I mean, guess what the hell are they doing it? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of the guys, very smart guys, have come up with, like, with their own ways of measuring the M3, which they don't report anymore. And their thing that they've gone back right from to test it has followed it right up until it stopped. Well, they figure my money supply is increasing at over 10% right now on their privately done ones. That's a lot of liquidity.
I mean, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, they probably eliminated M3 was because they were about to really gun it up and they didn't want to have to report it.
Yeah. Yeah, true enough. But that's
they claimed the reason that they stopped it was because they wanted to save the taxpayers money. Like, all the ways the government's going to save us money is let's not report the money supply.
Right, right.
They care about saving money. They don't care about saving money anyplace else but that. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so it looks like right now the inflation's going into the markets, like into the stock market right now.
Into everything, although we have had pullbacks recently. Copper prices were down big today. Oil was down $2.50. Oil's back at $58, lowest we've been in a while.
Yeah, I got a question. I was thinking today, because everybody's blaming it on warm weather, and I'm looking at natural gas, like, it's already come down, but natural gas was kind of pulled down, but you'd think that would have been hurt the most by it. But I got, like, up here it's so mild, I find myself driving more. Because of the mild winter.
Mainly, yeah, but the cold weather is what really guns the demand because people have to heat their homes.
Right, right.
And so when it's not so cold, you don't need as much heat. So that's really, you know, but you know the thing, what? It's not going to stay warm. I'm here in Connecticut. Yeah, it's warm, you know, but it was in the 30s today. So it's starting to get colder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, January's here. It ain't going to stay warm. I mean, that's one thing we know. It's not going to stay warm.
Well, that's like a natural gas longer, or I think the story for natural gas is going to be excellent because I think up here they're not going to look for it in places. They're just going to stop looking for it as a...
You know, the only place, we only had one area of the world that we lost money in last year, and that was Canada. That was because a lot of our investments in Canada are in the Canadian trusts.
Right, right.
They got clobbered, but we made money in every other investment we made, in every other country we made. The only country where we had losses on paper, and the only country where we had stocks that were down, was in Canada.
I guess we're an emerging market. Just kidding.
And none of them didn't have any losses until the government came out with their proposal. Now, we don't really know how that's going to end up because nothing is final yet.
Right.
But I tend to think that these Canadian trusts are very good buys. I mean, I continue to buy. I bought two more trusts for my own personal account today.
Oh, I think they are, too. I think they're so cheap. They're selling, a lot of them are selling below book value.
I mean, that's where I'm funneling cash. I'm buying into these things, and as they get cheaper, you know, even if the new tax law is passed as is, these stocks are cheap.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. They are cheap.
The surprise would be if the law is not enacted as proposed, it is somewhat less onerous, most likely meaning that the grace period is elongated, so it's not 4 years, it's something longer.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard to say. We've been in minority governments up here. You just don't know which way they're going to turn. Like, I mean, if they go into another election, which I've heard rumblings about could be fairly soon, you know, the other parties might be glad glad that those guys did it, so we don't have to do it, you know, like that kind of thing. But it's hard to say because everybody's kind of been jockeying for a position here. And it'll probably be another minority government, just depends who's on top, you know. But, anyways, well, I hope 207's good for everybody. Oh, you kind of stopped them there when you told them gold was up 25%. Nobody really commented on that.
Yeah, well, I was trying to show them that the market wasn't really up because, I mean, look what happened to the price of gold. So,
yeah.
I mean, the stock market didn't even keep up with this metal, right?
Yeah, everybody was kind of quiet on that one. Okay, anyways, I'll let you go here.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Good luck up there, and look, good to have you guys up in Canada listening to us down here.
Yeah, you ever thought opening an office up here?
No, I mean, it's very difficult because of all the Canadian securities laws. I mean, not that we don't have a lot of them here, but it's a whole new government to deal with and all the regulations, all the provinces. So.
Right, right, I got you. Okay, very good. Talk to you later, bye.
Take care. Hey, we got our regular on the line, Bob from Great Neck. Happy New Year, Bob.
Hey, Happy New Year to you, Peter. Just wanted to see what your take was on gold. Not so much the metal, but the gold stocks.
They clobbered them today. I mean, they just clobbered them. And there was a big... Today was a very interesting day because gold was down like $6-7 an hour before the open. Then by the time it opened, you know, by the time the New York stock market opened, gold turned around and went positive. Then it rallied $8. I mean, silver was down 30 cents, went positive, then got clobbered. And so then gold ended up down, like, went down $10 and came back. So they reversed. Oil was just clobbered. And so they killed the mining stocks. They killed the oil stocks. They even took the Dow on a little bit of a roller coaster. It was up about 120 points and went down 40. NASDAQ was up like 35, went to down like, you know, over 10. Of course, the stock market ended up settling positive. But I don't know. There was a lot of reversals and selling going on. I mean, I don't know if it means anything. I mean, or not. I mean, but I still think, you know, the dollar also had a big day. The only positive news, theoretically, that came out was this ISM manufacturing number. You know, a month ago it was 49.5, and it came out at 51.5, and that was about the only thing that came out, and that rallied the dollar. I mean, I don't know, you know, why. I mean, there was some guy, too, on CNBC today. I mean, they're so ridiculous, and they said that, you know, trying to poo-poo the trade deficit by saying that, well, the United States makes more stuff than we've ever made in our history, or we've made the most stuff in history. Now, I don't know how somebody could possibly say that. I mean, I don't know what it is that we're making. I mean, first of all, if we're making more stuff than ever before, why don't we have a trade surplus? You know, where is all this stuff, and where do I go to buy it? You know, I don't know. I am very cognizant when I shop for things and when I'm looking around in stores to check to see where things are made. And it's very rare that I come across something that's made in America. So I don't know what all these things are that we're supposedly making. But I sure as hell wish I knew where to buy them.
It didn't seem to me, looking at the news, that there was anything near enough to cause the cavalcade of especially in some of the junior gold and silver. I mean, stuff like Seabridge, which has been a very strong performer with like 8.5%.
Well, remember, there's a lot of these. We talked about there's 9,000 hedge funds out there. There's a lot of money sloshing around in either direction. And if all of a sudden they all start looking at their charts and start saying, uh-oh, reversal, sell, you know, these prices could get hammered very fast. And remember, you know, when these guys are following these trend-based systems or whatever it is, you know, lower prices cause more selling, you know, the momentum or you break a trend line or something. So as the prices start to go down, it reinforces itself and exacerbates the pressure on the stock because you just get more selling and the buyers step away. So you've just got a lot of hot money in the market, a lot of speculative money, a lot of highly leveraged players in there. So it's only natural that you'd see this kind of wild volatility in the market.
You think the same applies to energy stocks? So you think it's...
Yeah, of course. I think a lot of hedge funds are active in the energy stocks. I mean, a lot of people are active in these stocks. It's, you know, remember, most of these stocks aren't paying these high dividends, and so people aren't in it for the yield. They're in it for the appreciation. They're in it for the gains. And so if the gains look like they're going to go away, if the stocks look like they're going to turn around, they want to exit, and they want to try to buy back in at a lower price. You've got a lot of people doing this, and they're doing it with a lot of leverage. So, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of volatility, and it actually creates a lot of opportunity sometimes for people. I mean, if you're thinking about buying a gold stock one day, you know, well, just wait. I mean, don't necessarily buy it on a day that it's up a lot. Just wait till the day that it's down a lot. I mean, you run the risk that, you know, eventually that these things are going to take off, which they will. But, I mean, so far, on any given day, the odds are that it's not that day. But, I mean, sure, you know, eventually it's going to be that day.
Are you still positive on the Canadian economy? Because I see the loonie is suffering a little bit of a...
Well, the loonie's been suffering for a while. I mean, and some of the other currencies have now been gaining on it, like the Australian and New Zealand dollars. They had been doing better in Canada. But, yeah, ultimately, I think the Canadian dollar is going to go higher. And we'll see what happens when they have a resolution of these taxes on the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the fact that the trusts weren't taxed was a big positive for Canada. And the way they responded is they said, well, you know, we better raise tax on the trust because to make them fair with the corporations. What would have been better is if they just stopped taxing the corporations too,
yeah,
and eliminated the tax for everybody. You know, the government is like, oh, what are we going to do? We don't have enough tax revenue. Great. That's what you want. You don't want your government to have enough tax revenue. You know, the less money the government has, the less they're going to spend. I mean, look, we live here in Connecticut. But just to the north of us is New Hampshire. Now, New Hampshire has no state income tax and no sales tax. Well, when I've been to New Hampshire, they got police, they got fire department, they got public schools, they got everything that we got. But what they don't have is a sales tax and an income tax.
They don't have as many socialists.
How do they have all those things? But the key is, you want the government to tax you less, so they'll spend less. I mean, so that's the way they should have solved the problem of the trusts creating, you know, is they should have stopped taxing the corporations. But, you know, government, they don't see, they look at these things from a different perspective. You know, our problem is what they like. You know, it's like the perspective of a parasite and a host. You know, we have a very different frame of reference of what's good and what's bad.
Right. All right, well, you have a great New Year, and we'll speak soon.
Okay, great. You're going to be down in Florida, too, right?
Yes, I will.
All right, we'll see you there.
You got it.
All right, well, you're getting to the last 5 or 6 minutes or so. But, yeah, I think, you know, getting into the bullion, I think this is, you know, a nice pullback. I mean, gold is still above 600. And I think it's just building a base for another big move. Silver is, you know, above $12. You know, it's going to move higher, I think. I think platinum looks good. I think all these metals, even copper has had a big move down. Everybody is writing the death knells or singing this is the end. People, I heard some of the other day saying that copper has now seen the highest it'll be in his lifetime. It'll never get up there again. We're getting a lot of consensus that metals prices are going to fall. Sounds like a good time to be buying to me. I don't think we're anywhere near there. Anyway, again, we love the Perth Mint. That's how we help our clients buy physical gold, silver, and platinum. And if you want to get information on the Perth Mint, you can do it on my website at www.europac.net, or you can call up Danny Dwyer in the Newport Beach office. And the number there is 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. The only people who cannot participate are people who live in Arizona. That's the one state where it is not, we're not allowed, nobody is allowed to sell Perth Mint certificates to residents of Arizona. But as long as you don't live in Arizona, give us a call, and it's a great way to buy gold and silver. If you do live in Arizona, you can still invest in the Perth Mint, but not through the certificates. You'd have to buy the exchange-traded fund in Australia, which is similar to some of the exchange-traded funds they have here in the U.S., but I believe they are a little safer. If you want to get gold in Australia and you live in Arizona, you can just talk to one of our brokers about buying the exchange-traded Australian gold fund that's run by the Perth Mint. Also, you know, a lot of the commodity stocks or commodities in general that have pulled back, I think this looks like a good buying opportunity to me. You know, as I said, the only thing that we really have that's gone down is these Canadian trusts. So if you're looking to buy a bargain, if you're looking to, you know, buy some beaten down, you know, tax loss sellers, I mean, something where you're really getting value for your money, I think that these Canadian trusts, regardless of what they are, so, you know, oil and gas related or separate, I think that they have really been beaten down, and, you know, you're getting a good deal on them. I mean, I don't think the Canadian government is going to come out with another even more onerous tax than the one they've already imposed. And so I think the chances of that happening are zero, whereas the chances of them, you know, softening the what's already been proposed is far more likely. I don't know if it's more likely than them doing nothing, but it's certainly more likely than them changing their mind and making it worse. And meanwhile, the stocks are already priced. I mean, I think they're priced as if the tax hikes went into effect already. I don't even think they're assigning any value to the fact that these trusts have 4 years of tax-free income. And, of course, you can do a lot with that information as a company. You can move a lot of dividends and a lot of things forward and push a lot of expenses back when you know that, okay, 4 years from now, there's going to be much higher taxes. So they can say, look, I'd rather have my income moved forward and push my expenses backwards because, you know, I'm going to have a higher tax rate in the future, significantly higher tax rate. And I'm sure companies are going to find ways of doing that. So the benefit is more than just the 4 years because we could see four fat years of higher dividends, more so than we would have because of companies trying to front load those earnings and those dividends to take advantage of the expiring tax breaks. So, I mean, I think this is a lot of this is being overlooked. And, you know, there's just more people selling and selling, and, you know, the lower the prices go, the more people want to sell. And I think on these trusts, you know, you just buy them and don't worry about it. Just, you know, realize you're signing up for one hell of a dividend yield, and don't buy it and be worried that, you know, the price went down because it'll probably go down. I mean, as I said, I bought more today. I bought a little bit more last week, and, of course, the prices are down almost as soon as I get filled. But at some point in time, that won't be the case. Anyway, we're running out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This is, again, Peter Schiff, Wall Street Unspun. We do the show live every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on www.unspun.com. www.europac.net. Hey, if you haven't ordered my book yet, Crash Proof, make sure and pre-order it. You can get it on my website. It's coming out in February. I think the first week of February. It's a dynamite book. You're going to love reading it. Order it right now on my website at www.europac.net so you get a copy as soon as they become available.